Welcome to We've Got Issues. I'm Joshua Holland. We're joined this week by Matt Robison. Matt wrote a piece for Alternet about the Democrats' failing efforts to message the pandemic, the disastrous pandemic response against Trump. But first, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Liz Prezza, Alternet's managing editor. Hi, Liz. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Oh, are the Democrats having a hard time messaging something? That's shocking to me.
Were you sitting down for that? I hope you were sitting down, because that is a shocker. You know, I talked to folks, I talked to Liz yesterday. I was like, we need to figure out some stuff that isn't pandemic related to talk about on the radio show. And we were stumped.
Yeah, scoured the internet. There's nothing out there except for just coronavirus.
You know, let me ask you something, Liz. I was noting that there's this huge locust outbreak in China, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was this dye spill, this ink spill in Canada, and the rivers were running red, blood red. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. And then they came out. So then there's these tornadoes, and they came out
with earthquakes,
the big earthquakes. So how surprised would you be? And oh, let's not forget the aliens being spotted by the Air Force and all that. How shocked would you be in reality if we had a zombie problem?
You know, I'm just ready for it. I feel like I've been working my entire life to be able to survive a zombie apocalypse. So I'm ready for it to just happen.
I've got some macaroni and cheese in boxes. I think you could trade that for bullets.
That was why I moved out of the city, you know, a couple of years ago. I had to get prepping.
Yeah, I got to start prepping.
That's
yeah,
not dude. Where you want to be when the zombie apocalypse hits, that's for sure.
It's true. Speaking of zombie apocalypse, Politico reports that Jared Kushner is in charge of the coronavirus response. He has a broad portfolio of issues, and he fixed the Middle East, of course, and now he's going to apply that brilliant mind of his to, I mean, this is so Dunning-Kruger effect, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this guy doesn't know shit, and he's in charge of everything.
Well, I just read that article, and it was like Jared Kushner saying that he's running his own projections, and he's decided that Governor Andrew Cuomo is exaggerating the amount of. It's like, what models are you using?
Dude? What projections are you
he's
using?
He's like creating it on Photoshop. I'm like, this dude does not have the qualifications to run our government's response to a global pandemic. I mean, not that anybody else in Trump's team seems to have a good grasp on it.
I mean, look, this guy isn't even a good businessman. He got into that huge 666 Park mm-hmm. Avenue or whatever, fifth or whatever that building was, right? They needed a bailout. They needed corruption to bail them out of that deal.
Well, who purchases a building with 666 on it? Like that.
God, you don't watch movies? Like, have you never watched a horror movie?
Oh gosh.
Meanwhile, elsewhere in the Pence Task Force coronavirus team, crack team of experts. So also Politico reported that the Trump team has been shipping PPE, personal protective equipment, including respirators, overseas until they got bad publicity for it.
Oh, jeez Louise. Like,
this story is crazy. So a Trump official was trying to get protective gear for doctors and nurses. And they, so they're calling around to other countries. They go, hey, do you have some respirators? They call the Thais, right? And then the Thais are like, what? Like, let me quote the Politico piece. The official asked the Thais for help only to be informed by the puzzled voices on the other side of the line that a U.S. shipment of the same supplies was already on its way to Bangkok.
That is so absurd. Oh, my goodness.
There's just no, I mean, there's just no end with these people. It's just crazy.
Yeah. And that's like really the crux of it all is, you know, you have Donald Trump saying like, this is up to the governors, up to the governors. Well, like, stop shipping materials that they could acquire off to other countries. Like, oh, geez.
It's maddening. It's maddening. And then, of course, Trump has been just this, his usual like crazy person that mm-hmm. just this partisan, rambling, incoherent heap of id. And he like, he has one press conference where he just literally acknowledges that this is a serious crisis. And all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, he has a new tone.
It just is so sickening. And we deserve everything that's coming to us. If this yeah, is we do. Seriously what... how the media is going to handle a shift in tone. Like
shift in tone.
He's had 3 million shifts in tone since he took office, since before he took office. Like, we know who Donald Trump is, and any kind of like evidence to the contrary is just him playing this game. And it's so gross. It really is.
And they get played. Playing a game is an excellent thing. So the Daily Beast has this piece today. Its headline is Trump literally laughed at how he can game the press with his new tone. Oh, so here he is like, look at these suckers, these absolute chumps. I insult them. I call them enemies of the people, blah, blah, blah. And then all I have to do is be like ever so slightly serious about something and they'll laud me for my new tone. And he's just, I mean, he knows that they're total marks, easy marks. Meanwhile, the networks keep broadcasting. I should be specific. Fox and MSNBC are both broadcasting the nightly Trump pandemic mm-hmm. hour. And MSNBC's on air talent is like condemning the network for doing this. For I mean, it's crazy. And there's a piece, Jack Schaefer has a piece today. He writes that he finds the efforts to get these networks to stop carrying this live, quote, more troubling than I do Trump's lies.
Ridiculous, first of all. But yeah, I mean, the media just has no idea how to handle Donald Trump, and it's been that way since day one.
Yeah, it's really frustrating.
I mean it's
extremely frustrating. Meanwhile, did you catch this? Brian Kemp, governor of Georgia,
who just figured out how the coronavirus works.
Yeah, he's, I mean, this guy, first of all, he stole that election. He should not be anywhere near the whatever. But he said today that he had just learned that asymptomatic people can transmit the coronavirus. Just learned this.
Yeah. What's it like to stick your fingers in your ear for the last 2 months?
He says, and I quote, individuals could have been infecting people before they ever felt bad, but we didn't know that until the last 24 hours. What do you mean we, white guy? What the fuck, man?
We didn't know that. Yeah. We have been avoiding grocery stores.
Yeah. What the month. Fuck are you talking about? Man, they're yeah. crazy. And mind you, the governor's office is 6 minutes drive from the CDC.
Oh, God. I mean, anything to avoid like responsibility over your poor response to this crisis, I guess. Same thing in Florida. Like Governor DeSantis just... anything these people can do.
To another avoid. Trumper. Yeah. Yeah. Personal well, listen, personal responsibility is for the poors. Okay. it's not for Republicans. This is not, it's like bootstraps, you know, bootstraps, personal responsibility. That shit's for the poors.
Yeah. Speaking about personal responsibility, there was that pastor who was in Florida, the megachurch pastor who was arrested for, it was, I think, unlawful assembly is what they got him for hosting like 1,000 people at his mega church in the middle of a global pandemic.
Yeah. Howard Brown was his Howard name. Brown. Yeah. And Rodney Howard Brown. and he, But he had been warned before, I believe. Mm-hmm. I may be mixing up my pastors, because there's been a raft of these, right?
Right.
I believe this guy was first. Warned. Yeah. So he was warned, and he said, "Okay, I won't do it." And then he just held a mass again, and he's like, "Yeah, well, God will protect us."
He also claimed that the church got shot out at during services, and there were like literally police officers positioned outside of the building during his mass that he held.
And you know, these people are, I think there's something in the Bible about not lying. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm not sure. Because people, it's a really like, First Amendment, right? I have a First Amendment right, freedom of religion, la, 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 la. Sure, fine. You, of course, have a First Amendment right to freedom of religion. No one's arguing that. But, you know, try to assemble without a permit, and that's where you run into these issues. I mean, that's where they get you. And as a
God, and look, nobody's saying you can't worship.
Right. It's the assembly. You know,
figure out how to do. I mean, because listen, a lot of churches and synagogues and mosques are adapting with online sermons and stuff like that.
But
right.
You can't collect tithe over the internet as easily, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. What about can't you Venmo God? Yeah. Little Venmo action.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
So this guy did cancel services after his arrest, but meanwhile, there was a Louisiana church that was packed for services again. This is after they charged the pastor. Let's see, CBS has this story. Buses and cars filled a Louisiana church parking lot for another service Tuesday evening as worshipers flocked to hear a Louisiana pastor who is facing misdemeanor charges for holding services despite a ban on. And in the annals of like the craziest people in the entire universe, Roy Moore, if you'll remember Roy Moore.
Yes, unfortunately do.
Roy Moore, ex-Alabama Chief Justice to aid Central Church defying coronavirus order.
Yeah, wow. These people, they're really big, you know. It's a really, really big show to defy the government.
Yeah,
you got it. And get your congregation sick with a deadly virus.
I mean, it's such a grift too, right? Because they're like, you know, the atheistic government is giving us a hard time, trampling on our rights.
And popping back to the Rodney Howard Brown thing, in my opinion, the really insidious part of it is if you like read the report, he claimed that the building, they spent like $100,000 on a purification system. So he's going on about how his church is the most sterile building in America. I'm like, there's no bottom. There's absolutely no bottom.
That's like the snake oil Trump is selling with various cures. Fox News has been all over that too, hyping fake cures. Meanwhile, Anthony Fauci, the guy who's actually in charge of infectious diseases in the federal government, he's facing all of this derp from the far right, and a New York Times reported today that he is getting a security detail. Mm-hmm. They're like threat. You know, you have these bumbling idiots pulling stuff out of their ass, and then here's this source of information, and they're like, "Got to get that guy."
Jeez.
Got to get that guy. So, yeah, far right is handling this all very well.
And it seems, the coronavirus just in general is making people go a little crazy, right?
Yeah, me too. I'm going crazy.
Probably not as crazy as this train conductor.
No.
Where was that?
That was in Los Angeles, the port of Los Angeles. So, if people didn't catch this story, it's pretty crazy. There's the U.S. naval ship, the hospital ship Mercy, which anchored off of Los Angeles in anticipation of a glut of demand for hospital beds. And this train conductor he drove his train full speed off of the tracks in an attempt to crash it into the ship. And this is crazy. I mean, fortunately, nobody was killed in this. Nobody was killed. But he is apparently. So when I read this, I don't know. I thought, okay, QAnon. This guy must be QAnon. So I'll read, I think this is from the LA Times. So when the California Highway Patrol officer contacted the man, he made a series of spontaneous statements, including, "You only get this chance once. The whole world is watching. I had to. People don't know what's going on here. Now they will." Then later, he said he knew it would bring media attention and, quote, "people could see for themselves." The FBI said that he said he did it, quote, "out of a desire to wake people up." He said that he thought the USNS Mercy was suspicious and did not believe the ship is what they say it's for. And he said it was some sort of government takeover of something. So
can everyone just please stay home?
Just stay fuck home. And especially if you're completely bonkers, man. Because honestly, that's not going to help anything. But did you get this thing where I was like, oh, as soon as I read that, I was like, QAnon.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's just obviously somebody who is big in the anti-government
conspiracy sphere. Yeah, and I'm sure.
Also, it sounds like he just was looking for some notoriety, because he said to the police that sometimes you just get a little snap, and man, it was freaking exciting.
Dude, yeah, seriously, watch a movie. Check out Dr. Strangelove. That's a good movie.
It's a good one.
Yeah. I saw that the other day.
But running your train off the tracks to slam it into a ship. Also, that's the confusing part to me, because like that's a whole different, there's land and then the ship's in the water, and I'm not exactly sure where you think it's going.
I mean, so the way I understand it is that it's a rail terminal to the port that they, you know, they unload the ships. And so he just took the train and like full speed to the end and like beyond the end, right? Crazy. Crazy story. And I'm not reporting that this guy is a QAnon devotee. Certainly.
It's just us.
It's just what I took when I'm like, okay, nut job. Like
some people are saying.
I've heard people say, yeah, smart people are saying it's a QAnon nut job. And if this guy is, again, there's no indication so far that he is, he would not be the first. There was a guy who, drove a dump truck and had a standoff with cops and blocking the Hoover Dam. He was a QAnon guy. And then there have been a couple of murders, including the murder of a mob boss in Staten Island attributed to QAnon. So anyway, yeah, crazy. Anyway, let's move along with our show. We're going to take a quick break and then be right back with Matt Robison. Stay tuned. Why you still playing on my phone? I thought we had cleared the situation here. You know I don't want your man no more. And tonight you won't find him here. I'm through and I'm playing with my heart. I see he's still playing with your mind. Whatever it is you plan to start, find someone else. I don't have time to go through these changes. Welcome back. I'm still Joshua Holland. I'm joined now by Matt Robinson. Matt is a freelance writer from Massachusetts. Matt has a piece up at Alternate. It's titled "Why Democratic Messaging on Trump's Disastrous Pandemic Failures Has Been Uncoordinated, Passive, and Ineffective." Matt Robinson, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time to talk about this. This seems like a very, very serious issue. I do believe that Trump's approval rating on his handling of the coronavirus pandemic is a lagging indicator. And I don't believe that it is going to remain in positive territory. There's been some shifts recently, but I do think that this piece that you've written gets to a key piece of this, which is this kind of apparent asymmetry between how many of us would like to see Democrats messaging against Trump, how Republicans would be if the shoe were on the other foot, and what we're seeing coming out of the Democratic Party. Your thoughts on why this is?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what I set out to do in the piece is to try and determine if Democrats are really doing enough on message consistency, amplification, and just downright toughness in comparison to, as you said, the way Republicans would be responding and have responded in the past in similar public health crises. And if they're not, to try to figure out why and maybe take a look at what they could be doing more effectively. And I ended up determining, after talking to some Democratic communications experts looking at some of the previous responses that we've seen on both sides, that yes, the Democrats are feeling inhibited in how aggressive, how tough, how coordinated they can be. Some of it is just sort of the strategic hand that they've been dealt. They don't hold the White House. They don't have a formal nominee. They don't have the ability to stand up and have a willing White House press corps lap up everything that they say the way that President Trump does, and to make news every day. And, you know, they have congressional leadership that takes the public health crisis very seriously, and with so much on their plate, has been putting all of their efforts into passing legislation. That being said, they definitely are falling short of the kinds of watermarks of consistent messaging that we've seen from Republicans and even themselves in previous crises.
Part of this is just the structural reality that Donald Trump is the incumbent and he holds the White House, and he has these the Donald Trump pandemic hour every night. The networks carry this. They should not, right? They're carrying disinformation that has led people to drink pool cleaner. I mean, it's a kind of a disaster. But is there anything keep and Democrats don't have a clear a party leader who can kind of set the messaging agenda for the day. Joe Biden is, of course, the presumptive nominee, but he is not the nominee. He actually can't coordinate directly with the DNC. How big of an issue do you think this is?
It's definitely an issue, and it feeds right into sort of a congenital problem that Democrats have, which is, you know, they're not the most, it's just not in their DNA to be super coordinated and aggressive when it comes to overall messaging. It's that old joke, I belong to no organized party, I'm a Democrat. And yes, some of these structural problems are clearly feeding in. And, you know, there's sort of two prongs to, if you're sitting in Joe Biden's basement bunker right now, you desperately need to continue the outreach that we know is going on right now to the Sanders campaign, to Sanders supporters, to allies, to try and accomplish the party consolidation that many people view as long overdue. You have to do that. You also have to deal with the crisis communications arm and trying to pivot to a general election campaign. So no one is saying that this is easy and straightforward. Those barriers are definitely in the way. That said, there is a brain trust within the Democratic Party. There is leadership, certainly in the House and Senate. So it would be possible. It would be possible, having worked in those bodies before, to get some more alignment, some more consistency, and to drive a stronger message.
I should have mentioned at the outset that Matt is a former Hill staffer, so he has been around and kind of seen that how the sausage is made. The way this would work in, say, the UK in a parliamentary system is that the Democrats would have or the minority party would have a shadow minister of health, and that person would come out and make briefings, et cetera, et cetera. I think, you know, that, and you talk about the piece, the Democrats being wary of being accused of politicizing a public health crisis. I feel like this would be a way to politicize it without politicizing it explicitly. In other words, if they were to get somebody other than Joe Biden, by the way, somebody with relevant healthcare experience in their portfolio to give briefings with public health experts, with reliable information, et cetera, it would highlight the dysfunction of Trump's blather by contrasting it. And we are seeing this to some degree from Democratic governors, from Cuomo here in New York, Jay Inslee in Washington, Gavin Newsom in California. I don't know, what is keeping them from doing this?
I think it's because of the structural problems, and as you said, because there is reluctance to engage in the midst of a crisis. But I also think it's worth bearing in mind some of the history here that I pointed to in the article, which is in similar healthcare crises, Republicans have felt no such compunctions about being highly aggressive in their messaging. And, you know, just as a point of reference, think back to how Republicans went after Barack Obama just 6 years ago during the 2014 Ebola outbreak. There were about 29,000 confirmed or probable worldwide Ebola cases, about 11,000 deaths, only 11 cases and 2 deaths in the U.S. for what is a far more deadly pathogen at baseline. But what were Republicans saying at the time? They were calling the U.S. government's response inept, a lack of leadership, a lack of strategy, a failed policy. And you were seeing an amplification, Republicans being on the same page with how they were messaging the crisis from the get-go. So it's not clear that the old wisdom of, you know, look, in a public health crisis, you can't have any injection of politics whatsoever. It's not clear that that's necessarily the case. And I would go further to say that one thing you've seen emerge this week is a new White House messaging strategy. In the 3 days from the beginning of the week to the point we're at now, in Donald Trump's daily press conference, you know, fountain of lies, you've heard him repeat the claim 20 times. It's been cataloged 20 times that he said that the goalposts here are the projected 2.2 million deaths that would have occurred if they had done nothing. So by comparison, the 250,000 deaths that may occur now on the trajectory that we're on, that would be a win. It would be a success. And that is a really dangerous line for Democrats, because when you start to project out 4 months, 6 months, and the fog of war sets in and memories become hazy, that is a pretty good sounding line of revisionist history. So, you know, I think that the time really is now to hammer home a consistent understanding to the American public that they're not currently getting about the depth of failure that we've seen.
Yeah, it's a bit maddening. You know, you talked about the Ebola crisis. I keep thinking about Benghazi, because Benghazi began as an attack line by the Romney campaign during the 2012 election. It was widely condemned at the time as inappropriate, as false, and yet they ran with that so consistently. And I think that there's something, you know, there are these niceties that one would like to observe during a national crisis like this. Let's not politicize something that is going to cause a lot of deaths. Obviously, it would be great if everybody respected that. I think that conservative Republicans since the, you know, Gingrich Revolution, whatever date you want to put on the kind of hard rightward lurch of the Republican Party, they have abandoned those norms so consistently that I think that when they do it, it's kind of a dog bites man story. And I think Democrats are probably right to be wary of how the media would respond if they explicitly politicized this more so. Your thoughts?
There's no doubt in my mind that there's a double standard. And you see a far more, because Fox News and other right-wing media apparatus feels no compunctions about maintaining journalistic standards and even-handedness, there's clearly a stacked deck against Democrats, because the media, the legitimate media, is going to approach things with journalistic standards. And they're going to look at Democratic messaging and call into question whether they're politicizing a crisis. Fox News, you know, doesn't quibble about these kinds of things. So yes, concern is definitely well placed, but I also think that there's a way to do this that is pointed at the public health. For example, if you were to have the members of the House and Senate every day looking into the specific failures of the branches of the administration, the confusion that's been sown by CDC, the lack of guidance that's come from the Department of Health, the really tragic failure to mobilize nationalized resources to bring ventilators and personal protective equipment to bear in the hotspots around the country. If Democrats were hitting those themes every day, it doesn't even have to be in a political framing. It could simply be about holding leadership to account and making sure that people in need get the help that they deserve. I think that would be effective, and it would certainly help advance the story that there's no revisionist history here. There's an ongoing rolling public health crisis and failure that is largely human caused.
Yeah. And every day there's a new story coming out about one agency or federal authority or another warning the White House that this was going to be bad, or generally warning that a pandemic could come and at any time. It's a matter of when, not if. Let me get your thoughts on a story that's just being reported today. We're recording this on Thursday. CNN reports that Nancy Pelosi announced the creation of a new bipartisan House Select Committee on the coronavirus crisis that will exercise oversight. She is going to put Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, who's tough cookie, in charge of it. But I wanted to read this piece to you. Quote, the speaker told reporters, this is CNN, the speaker told reporters on a conference call that the committee's immediate focus will be on the here and now, not the Trump administration's initial response to the pandemic, though she said there will come a time when such a review will be appropriate. So,
yeah, I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard. The way people think, the way people respond to information, it's so hard to project forward to how you're going to think about it in a few months' time. And so what I hear bleeding through in that statement from Speaker Pelosi is that same skittishness that we're hearing from Democrats that I was able to quote in the article, through other reporting about looking like they're politicizing and they're being backward looking. The problem is, if you do try to go through the exercise of projecting forward 3 months, 6 months, and you get to the time that Speaker Pelosi is referring to here, that now is the time for us to look back at the failures. At that point, the messaging is going to be, well, let's not look back, we're point fingers, place blame, and it's going to be amplified by the Trump message that we've seen previewed this week of Donald Trump is a hero who saved 2 million American lives. It could have been 2.2 million. It's only 200,000. He saved millions of American lives. It is going to be awfully hard for Democrats to overcome that amount of messaging at the time. Now, I'm not trying to say that engaging in those issues right now would also stick for the next 6 months, but I do think that it is important for Democrats to not simply let the current cluster of events slide by unanswered. And yes, you're seeing messaging coming from affiliated Democratic arms, American Bridge, Priorities USA, these super PACs, and some advertising online from the Biden campaign. But the point is, it's scattered. It's not coordinated. It's not being amplified at all levels of the party. And therefore, it's just not as effective as it could be.
Yeah. And one of the things that I find endlessly frustrating is this idea that, you know, maybe they're hoping, and I get this sense that they're hoping that reality will overwhelm Trump's defenses in this case as the kind of bodies stack up. And I think there is this stubborn refusal to recognize that political leaders shape public opinion. You know, you can't just step back and assume that the public will eventually get the message as the crisis accelerates, because you have this very extensive media apparatus on the right that creates an alternative universe very consistently. I don't understand why they don't, you know, why they don't see this.
Repetition trumps power of argument 100 times out of 100.
Yeah.
I think we've seen that over and over again. It's essentially a truism of communications. And that's why, look, you know, when you run an ad as let's say a congressional campaign, I've had to do this before, you know, what your ad people will tell you is you've got to get it up 14, 15, 17 times a week for it to start to make an impression. That's the power of repetition. And you were referencing Benghazi earlier. Well, Benghazi was about the stupidest attack in the history of political science.
Yeah.
It had no substance to it. That doesn't matter. I think Democrats are so attuned as the party of science to filtering things through a question of fact, a question of power of argument, that they lose sight of the power of repetition. And I think the White House has realized that it doesn't matter if right now they're sitting on a terrible, terrible set of facts. The important thing for them is that they have the structural advantage of having the White House, of being able to create a visual and an audible every day of the president repeating the same. It could be crap, but he can repeat the same message day after day. And yes, I think there is a high probability, based on what we've seen in recent history, that repeated weak message will defeat a strong but uncoordinated one on the Democratic side.
Yeah, yeah. And lest we be too negative, I should really note that Trump is his own worst enemy with this thing. He has too much blather on video. The ads cut themselves. We're seeing them from Joe Biden's aligned super PAC, where they just basically have quotes from Trump saying it's the Democrats' hoax. We're at 15 cases. We should be down to zero within a few days. And they just contrast that with the rising number of confirmed cases. So it's not as if he isn't, you know, doing everything he can to give Democrats fodder to use in this. I mean, it's happening. I was talking many years ago, I was speaking with Richard Viguerie. He's a legendary figure on the right. He was one of the kind of original gangsters in the conservative movement through the 50s and 60s when the conservatives were out in the wilderness and they were trying to grasp their way back into the mainstream. He's a direct mail legend. So Richard Viguerie, big old time right winger. And he said, you know, we have a real advantage when it comes to top down messaging because we are a party descended of monarchists. And you guys were the anti-royalists. And we're just, it's in our DNA. You follow the king. You follow the king.
Yeah, and now, you know, the Republicans have a king, and the Democrats don't. We tend to respond to a king with a committee.
Yes, that's right. And we try to logic our way out of brutal partisan fights, and that's always problematic. Matt Robison, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I believe we are out of time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Folks, Matt's piece is at alternet.org. It's titled Why Democratic Messaging on Trump's Disastrous Pandemic Failures Has Been an Uncoordinated, Passive, and Ineffective. I'd also like to thank Liz Preza and David Edwards, our producer and engineer. You can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Hall. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. I would like to thank the good folks at Alternet and Raw Story for supporting us. And of course, I would like to thank all of you good people for tuning in. Have a terrific week and try to stay safe.